Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Resolutions, while they are full of good intentions, are sometimes hard to stick to. But I did resolve to start this show at noon every day, and so far I am doing great. With 361 days until we wipe the slate clean again, how are you going to knock your goals out of the park? Are you focusing on fitness this year, finishing up a project, something entirely different? Well, today we're exploring what it takes to make a habit of following through. And we want to hear what's worked for you and what hasn't. Let's talk about it after this news from NPR. Six minutes past noon, that music you're hearing is subliminal Get It Done music. Okay, not really, but I thought if you just thought that, you'd feel more positive and productive by the end of the hour that we are about to spend together, about which I am delighted. I hope you are too. In the third of the program, that's how valuable this program is, my friends. You are getting three elements in today's show. Why, yes, it is true. We will be talking with Dr. Rod Evans and Deborah Baxter from Old Dominion University. They are teaching a course to prepare people for what is called the Miller Analogies Test. This is a high-level mental ability test that is used in many cases for graduate school admission or even to prepare for graduate school admission. And so we'll talk about that. It's apparently highly predictive. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, what the value of that test is and how it's changed over the years. And then we'll also talk with Danielle Morton, who's the co-author of a new book called Finishing School, The Happy Ending to That Writing Project You Can't Seem to Get Done. And I tell you, I think in our listenership, the percent of people who are writers or who have books in their closet that are not finished is very high. I would argue it's probably higher than the average out in the population. So I think that'll be a very, very interesting segment. And we'll also have some great opportunities for you at the Muse Writing Center. So all of that coming up in the course of our program. First, though, this will not come as a surprise to you. The fact of the matter is weight loss and fitness are always the top New Year's resolutions. How many of us have not made those resolutions in the past? We're wondering how you're doing with that, if that is your resolution this year. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us. You can also post on our Facebook page. And what we want to know is, what are your fitness or weight loss resolutions for the new year? Do you even participate in this concept of New Year's resolutions? There are a lot of us who really love the idea of turning the page on a new year, starting afresh, starting over again with a blank slate. And if that's you, we'd love to hear from you today as well. 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Are there things you're doing differently this year? Are there strategies that you've tried that are working? We're thinking about this not only from the perspective of fitness and health and finishing books and the like. We're really talking as well about the strategies that it takes to make a new habit stick. And since you are brilliant in every possible way, we know that you will have great thoughts to share about that. We're wondering what's worked for you when you've tried to change a habit, change something that you've done for a long time, either do it a new way or do a new thing. What have you done that has worked? What have you tried that has failed for you? 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're glad to have Joey Dweck with us today. He's the founder of weightlossbuddy.com, which is an online weight loss support site, which has trillions of members. Joey Dweck, nice to have you with us today. Thank you for being here.
Kathy, thanks so much for having. I have to tell you, that subliminal music, I'm rolling.
I like the fact your mind conceived it and you are achieving it. I like that very much. I like that very much.
I love it. Thank you.
And you're welcome. So you have this huge, huge community of people who are trying to lose weight. And it really speaks to what is the newest arsenal in this very challenging problem for our culture.
Yes. Yes, it is. As you know, I'm not going to belabor that because you know it. But I know that the unexpected life as a clergy spouse. So I know not to tell any white lies here, okay? But one of the nicest things about Buddy that we found, Kathy, we've been doing it for over 15 years and have hundreds of thousands. It's a totally free website called weightlossbuddy.com. But one of the things that we learned, and I'm sure I know how active you are and community affairs and all, but one of the things we found is that people use food as an emotional crutch. We all know that, right? I mean, basically, a lot of people don't, but when they're stressed out and they're having a problem, they'll turn to food to feel better. And we formed Buddy as a support system to those people who are stressed out. But one of the things that we recommend is that not only to look for a buddy that can help you, but to get outside yourself and help someone else.
Ah.
And that is really the crux. When you help someone up the hill, you get closer to the top yourself. That's our motto.
That's so, really interesting. So this idea of being helpful to someone else is actually, in a positive way, self-serving as well.
100,000%. Exactly.
Wow.
Right. You know how good you feel when you're giving someone a gift, right?
Mm.
Probably better than when you get a gift. Mm. And so when people go on Buddy, and I know that people are making resolutions now, and it's a great time to buddy up or team up for a fresh start this year. And it's a totally free site, weightlossbuddy.com. And we've been doing some nice stuff, and I'm very, very proud of the work that we've done. So that's one of the suggestions I'm going to make. And if they want to find somebody in their neighborhood or in their zip code to go jogging with or work out with, it's all there.
Wow. That's and message boards and all of the rest of it as well.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing. The whole nine yards.
This is interesting too, because, and Phil, I'm coming right to you, but this is interesting too, because this is one of those ways in which social media is really can change people's lives. And I wonder, it's just intriguing to think that you could be inspired and encouraged by somebody that you probably will never meet in person.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes that's the really crux of the matter here. We all are surrounded by family and loved ones and the coworkers, and yet we're struggling, right? So this whole idea of going outside your immediate circle to get help is really the catalyst that makes Buddy run.
Mm.
You find someone that's not. You know, people get very uncomfortable, Kath, when people lose weight, you know.
Oh, that's a great point.
About it, you know. So this is the entire idea of Buddy. You can go across the country or across the state or across the street to find someone to help out and help you out.
We're at 14 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Phil's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me, Kathy?
Yes. Go right ahead.
Okay. Last year, I resolved to walk every day, and I walked 3 miles every day for the 366 days.
Wow.
I also cut down on my intake of Krispy Kreme and Duck Donuts.
Okay. Well, that's a sacrifice, but somebody's got to do it, I suppose.
And I lost no weight. So in 2017,
what?
I have resolved to not walk at all.
Well, Phil, I think that's a really interesting point. So, but my concern is, what are you doing about the donut piece of that equation?
Well, it seems like it didn't work when I decreased them. So why don't I?
All right. So Joey, help us out here. What? Because the walking is a piece of it, but not the whole piece, right?
No, it's not. Phil, let me tell you all of the, I've heard this before. And first of all, you probably gain muscle, and the muscle may put the place of fat. What muscle weighs more? I'm sure you've heard all of that. But what we found is that diet is really, really crucial in losing weight. It's probably, in fact, it's been shown that it's a much bigger a component of losing weight than exercise is, okay? Even in the calorie in, calorie out, phase. So it's diet that's going to make a difference for you, Phil. I hate to tell you, given all this work you've done. And by the way, don't sell it short. Don't sell it short. Better off for it.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Phil, I'm guessing that you probably have better balance. You're probably less winded when you do other activities. Do you feel differently as a result of having walked 3 miles a day for 366 days?
Actually, I was telling my wife towards the end of the year, I was looking forward to the end because my knees were feeling worse. Oh. I was having more trouble getting out of bed in the morning. You know, it seemed to take a pounding on you.
I hear you. So, Phil, for you, it's probably probably not working. But I thank you for the call. 16 minutes past the hour. Joey Dweck, Phil talks about knees, and certainly there are a lot of people who've run for years who are now having knee challenges, and walking seems to be a much better strategy for them.
Mm. You know, this comes with time and with age and with wear and tear. It's so hard to see someone like Phil, and because you want them to keep it up. You know, there
sure.
are so many great benefits that come with that kind of discipline and that kind of strategy and exercising. But I'd like him to think about, you know, his diet. And one of the things we do, buddy, and I'd like you to look at it yourself, Kathy, is this diet that we came out with called the Fast Mimicking Diet. And I'm going to send you a box if you don't mind, and I promise not to hound you, okay? But it's a wonderful, wonderful way to jumpstart and kickstart an eating regime. And it comes out of the University of Southern California, and we're very, very proud of it. So if you don't mind, I'll send you a box. How about if I send Hannah one as well? Do you think she'd like that?
Just send it to Hannah. Send any related material to Hannah, because I will lose it. Let's just be very clear. 18 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665. 1-800-940-2240. What a pleasure it's been to talk to you, Joey Dweck. I really appreciate it. The website is called weightlossbuddy.com. It's an online weight loss support site where you can find somebody to buddy up with across the country, and you can compare notes. And you don't have to deal with their jealousy when you look so fabulous at the end of this thing, right? And you can also, we should note as well that the fact of the matter is, there are moments where you do get discouraged, and that's another opportunity to connect with somebody to help you through that.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. And Kathy, thanks so much for having me on, and please keep up the wonderful, wonderful work you're doing down there.
All right. Thank you so much, Joey Dweck. Really appreciate it. David's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to say that your interviewee's comment about diet being much more of a component is spot on. Mm-hmm. If you start to do a weight-bearing exercise program, that is walking or running in particular, and you're overweight, you are going to impact your knees.
Oh, that's a great point, because you're putting so much weight on them.
Yeah, that's the thing that you're going to impact the most is knees and ankles and hips. So you're better off doing something, adjusting your diet.
Yeah.
And doing some exercise that's non-weight bearing until you drop a few pounds, and then you will not be impacting. Then you can start with the weight bearing, which does burn more calories. It does.
Yeah.
And so the effectiveness is better.
So,
but
David,
lose a few pounds first,
sure,
then you might injure your knee.
It's
but
a
I've
really...
been running for 30 years, and my knees are great. I go up and down stairs fine. So it can be done.
There you go. David, it sounds like you come to this from personal experience. You said you ran for 30 years. Have you ever had a weight issue, or you just talk to other people?
Not too much.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I just can't. I don't know.
Yeah, but you rightly point out, though, that when you're pounding on knees, particularly over a period of time, that if you could take off a few pounds, particularly if you're, you know, if you're very overweight, that might help the whole process. And I think, too, I don't know if you would agree with this, David, I think sometimes people need small successes. So you need to build on small successes and instead of just, getting discouraged.
If you can drop 10 pounds from diet and non-weight-bearing exercise first, then you will enjoy the walking and or jogging a lot more. And as you say, that's a success, and it feels good, and that encourages you to go on.
That's a great point, David. Thank you for the call. I'm so glad that you're still able to run after 30 years. That's great. 21 minutes past the hour, and we're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to talk with Danielle Morton about finishing that writing project you may be working on. So we just finished talking a bit about weight loss and a little bit about fitness, because those are the most popular New Year's resolution goals. And if you have any more to say about that, we'd really love to hear from you on our Facebook page or by email at hearsay@whrv.org. We'll be back in just a moment. We do have the most hip and happening listeners. I just heard from a couple of listeners who identified our earlier music as being by the Little Comets. Is that correct, guys? Little Comets, is that correct? Well, there you go. See? We just have hip happening listeners. That's how it is. We're at 23 minutes past the hour talking about your New Year's resolutions today. What are you committing to, or do you participate in that exercise? Specifically, we're interested in what has worked for you. We just heard from David, who said he's a runner for 30 years. He said, you know, maybe if you're a little bit overweight, take a little bit of weight off before you get too aggressive about the exercise. Joey Dweck saying, you know, really the diet is the key to that, more so than exercise, although exercise is tremendously powerful for building strength and for improving your heart capacity and all the rest of it. We know as well that the other big resolution that people make has to do with finishing projects that may have started the year before. And I don't know how many listeners I've talked to over the years who've said they have a book in the closet that they have been working on, or they haven't quite finished, or it's been hanging out there for a long time. Danielle Morton is very familiar with that. She's the co-author of the new book called Finishing School, The Happy Ending to That Writing Project You Can't Seem to Get Done. Danielle Morton, thank you for being with us today.
Joe, thanks for asking me to come.
No, you're welcome. So, obviously there are a lot of people in this same stuck place. What do you think it is that causes people to start a project that is as personal as a book and sort of get bogged down along the way?
I think that when people start things, they start with an honest impulse to connect, to express, you know, something that they feel very strongly about. So very quickly you come against the sort of practical part of the scheduling, the time commitment, and getting it done, deciding what to do. That practical part is sometimes a mystery to people who are starting to write for the first time. But at the same time, you also come up against this emotional blocks. And people talk about writer's block, but as if it's procrastination. But frequently it has a big emotional component of doubt and shame and yearning to be heard. And all of these things don't get enough consideration. And so in finishing school, we try to deal with both of those things by helping people to set reasonable weekly goals, an hour or two a week with a very specifically defined task so that each week you complete something. It's not like this weekend I'm going to write 100 pages or tonight I'm finally going to figure out the problem with this character.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I going to do specifically next? And how much time do I have? Because the other thing that people don't talk about too much is that how do you find the time to write?
Yes.
Our lives are very demanding. Our jobs, our pets, our machines, all the things that go wrong.
Sure.
And you need to really hold that time sacred and not have an unrealistic expectation of what you can accomplish in that limited amount of time. And that's what finishing school helps you do, especially the emotional part, in that we define the emotional blockages to six topics, and we write three essays each about those with names like I'm a terrible writer,
yeah.
I'll never get published, I don't need any help, I'd rather fail in secret. You know, this kind of stupid ideas that come into your mind, that is this enormous drama that you're involved in writing this book, and it's just awful, and you're miserable, and you're untalented. No, you got 3 hours. Next week, what are you going to do?
You know, this is so interesting because I think the continuing theme here is incremental change. You know, we don't, you don't roll the stone up the hill. You know, that just doesn't, that's not how it goes. It's incremental change and building on incremental change. I remember a conversation with Senator Tim Kaine where, and I asked him, I said, you know, what is it that sort of keeps you at this from the perspective of these really big problems and challenges? And they just seem to be intractable at some level. And that's what he said. He said it's about incremental change over mm-hmm. time. And mm-hmm. that is true about so much in life. So you have to just build on smaller successes. Danielle Morton is the co-author of the new book, Finishing School, The Happy Ending to That Writing Project You Can't Seem to Get Done. We're at 27 minutes past the hour, and we'd love to hear from you if you find yourself in that boat, if among the things you cleaned out of your closet this weekend was an unfinished novel. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. You can also log on to our Facebook page and comment there as well. By the way, if you are a local writer, you first of all should probably get this new book, Finishing School, The Happy Ending to That Writing Project. You can't seem to get done. Sure.
Yeah.
We also have the terrific Muse Creativity Center in Norfolk that really serves the entire region. And they've got a couple of great opportunities coming up for you to really nurture that creative spirit. On Saturday, February 25th, they're registering now for this course called Spark Your Creativity. It's a one-day course. That would be great for writers, non-writers, all kinds of folks for that session. Also, Start Writing, Keep Writing Right Now is coming up Thursday evenings beginning February 23rd. So you have plenty of time to register, and the Muse hyphen, the-muse.org, that's what it is, the-muse.org is the website where you can do that. But they have great resources there because sometimes what you need, just as we were talking about weight loss, is a little bit of support. And Danielle Morton, that last thing you said was so interesting because it was about I'd rather be a failure in secret. I wonder if you talk a bit.
Yeah, I don't need any help. I'd rather fail.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, one of the six emotional pitfalls include arrogance. Because there's a healthy side to arrogance. I mean, I think to be a writer, you have to have a certain amount of arrogance because you have to say, one, what I have to say is important and I want others to hear it. And in the ultimate, I want people to pay hard-earned cash, their daily wage, to buy my writing.
Yes.
So that there's a little arrogance there. But there's also this kind of nonsense about being a writer. You know, I'm a lone wolf and I must look at the sea and I have to have a perfect notebook and all this kind of mystery that people often buy into, the mystery of the
yes.
gestures of being a writer rather than the actual work. And so I don't need any help, you know. I'd rather fail in secret is the truth, because one thing that you do if you create Finishing School, I teach it here, but you can also create uh-huh. it among your friends, is that we support one another. We text each other when we start to write. We commit together at a weekly meeting to say, I'm going to write for 2 hours next week between the hours of 10 and 2 on Saturday, or what, 10 and 12 on Saturday. And then you have to text your partner and your partner has to text you. So someone's expecting you to write in a very light way. I mean, you're basically responsible for your behavior. No one's going to remember after the meeting that you said you're going to start at 10. But because your partner is texting you and he or she writes, then you're texting her, you make that commitment. And if something gets in the way, you reschedule that commitment because you're doing it also for your partner.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that part of it, that part of help is really key. Now, I am, all the six emotional pitfalls, arrogance is definitely mine. And I didn't want to go to finishing school. My friend Terry thought it out, but we have built it together. And I went to attend the finishing school meeting with a little big chip on my shoulder because I definitely felt, you know, I didn't need any help. But I had an emotional issue in this thing that I was writing that I couldn't solve. And with the structure, the mild accountability, it helped me stay on track, not lose the point and figure this thing out. And there's a lot of moments like that in writing a book that you got to figure something out. And that's, I think, where people stop.
It's such a great point. 29 minutes before the hour. So I think we probably shouldn't feel so badly. I mean, if you're an author and you had that experience,
no,
you know, there you go.
No.
I can remember
I was going to mention one more thing that it will support your listeners. One of the chapters in finishing school is called book is called the John Steinbeck's 5 months in finishing school. And John Steinbeck was intent to attend our finishing school, but the way that he worked on Grapes of Wrath had a very similar structure to finishing school. Yeah, you should read that chapter because it's great. But every day when he sat down, he had a very defined goal. He knew how many hours he was going to spend, but he was also full of self-loathing. He thought he was a miserable writer, and yes, he'd already had written Of Mice and Men and Tortilla Flats, but those were terrible books, and as soon as he finished this, he was going to be exposed as a fraud, but at least then, you know, he would stop. He wouldn't have to be a writer anymore because it was all so terrible. All the people I teach in finishing school think like John Steinbeck, but John Steinbeck was at the peak of his powers writing an American classic, and he still had the same problems that we described in finishing school.
So doubt, the plague of doubt.
Shame that you're not doing well enough, and annoyance and arrogance that the people around you are getting in your way, lack of gratitude. I mean, just everything.
That is, I think sometimes that's really helpful to understand that the giants of whatever field you are pursuing have many of the same struggles. So I think sometimes that can help you push through it just a little bit.
Recognizing how hard the task you have before you is. You know, and how much time it takes and how many people just abandon it. You know, it is tough to finish.
Yeah, no,
it is.
No question about it. It's interesting, and I'm not trying to be a little author name dropper, but maybe I am. Years ago.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean,
your
program. This was we've been on for 20 years. So this was probably a year two or three, long, long, long time ago. I had the great privilege of interviewing Jean Owl, who is the author of The Clan of the Cave Bear. Enormous, enormous bestseller.
Yeah.
Enormous. And, you know, she's this tiny little lady. It's a tiny little woman. I'm trying to change my language around that. You know, and what I mean by that is that she was very shy. She was very... she was one of those folks that didn't particularly stand out. And she's this giant author. And I said to her, how did you do this? And she had five kids. That was the other part of the story. She had five kids.
Wow.
And I said, so, you know, how did you do this with five kids? And she said just what you said earlier. She said, I had a commitment that I got up every morning at 5 o'clock. And from 5 to 6, I think she says 5 to 6 or 5 to 6:30 or something like that, nobody else was awake. And that was my time. And I wrote every morning.
I did the same thing. I used to get up at 5.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She said I wrote every morning. And that's a big old book, as you know. And so it took a long time. But again, incremental progress. She just kept writing
There's also another great thing about what you're saying, which is that everybody has a story. I mean, everybody I know is supposed to have a book in them. I believe them.
Yeah.
I absolutely do. But you know what? It is hard to write a book. And you have to make a big commitment. And so staying on that track is the hardest thing.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the wrong book if you can't finish it.
No, well, so maybe you need to write another book later. You'll figure that out. But it doesn't matter. The thing is getting the thing done and not being too fussy about it. Just going at it and going at it in a regular way. You can always do a second draft. Just go forward.
Great
point. You know, and stay on track.
Done is better than perfect, as they say.
Yeah. We all have different levels of talent.
Yeah.
We all have different amounts of time. These are variable, but the commitment is your own, and that is your job. No one can, you can, you're a writer as long as you are writing, and nobody can take that away from you except you.
Fair enough.
End of story.
Dan L. Morton, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for letting us talk about finishing school.
You bet.
Thank you.
The book is Finishing School, The Happy Ending to That Writing Project You Can't Seem to Get Done. And I know, because you're smart, you're getting the whole theme here. It's not just about writing. It's not just about weight loss, not just about exercise. So many things in life are incremental, and you take a step or two every day. So maybe that's a little bit helpful. I hope it is anyway. Maybe you have now determined, as a result of having achieved some of your goals, that you are so smart that you should take the Miller Analogies test. Well, if that is your story, we'll have more in just a moment about how you can do that. And we are coming up on 25 minutes before the hour. You know, I just was looking online, because I do that during the music break, even though the music is delightful and inspiring, and we had a request to know what these tunes are, so Morgan will probably let us know. Apparently, there's possibility of some snow in the forecast, and people are already losing their minds. So, I tell you what, let's do. Let's take a deep breath, and let's wait till long about Thursday before we get too wrapped up in that, right? I mean, I'm as much of a weather person as anybody. I love when we get weather. I just love it. So, but let's not lose our minds before Thursday. Then we can lose our minds. Speaking of our minds, we are glad to have two guests to talk to us about the Miller Analogies Test. This is the mat of the GMAT, which is critical to graduate school. Dr. Rod Evans is a senior lecturer of philosophy at Old Dominion, and he writes and speaks on a variety of issues, including the usage of the English language. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And Deborah Baxter has been teaching for 25 years all over the world, not just in the U.S., but in Japan and Italy and Brazil. Nice to have you with us as well.
Thank you so much.
And our guests today come to us from the College of Professional Continuing Education at Old Dominion. And this GMAT, I didn't know that this was the MAT part of it, Miller Analogies Test. So what is behind this test? What does it seek to measure?
It is an entry exam into graduate school. There's two different tests that one can take. There's the Miller Analogies test, and then there's the GRE, the Graduate Record Exam. And the Miller's Analogy test is oftentimes entry into humanities programs at different graduate schools. It's a different kind of test, obviously, because it deals with analogies, and it's a much shorter and, I think, much more enjoyable test than the GRE.
Really?
It's 120 questions over 60 minutes. It's much less expensive, and I think it's kind of fun because it tests you on so many different areas.
So even if you weren't interested in going to graduate school, this would be kind of a fun thing to do.
We spent a year creating this course because we find this to be so much fun.
Okay.
Well, see, one of the things is that
I'm a little worried about both of you, but go ahead.
Okay, very well said. One of the things is that you could improve your vocabulary by taking our course. You could also improve your ability to reason and to study, because most people don't know how to study, right? I mean, most people study, they'll be in the seat for 2 hours. They won't take frequent breaks, whereas they should take a break every 20, 25 minutes. They should be moving around. And so we teach people also how to study. We talk about certain nutrients that are brain friendly. But in any event, we're going to talk. This is kind of a holistic approach to learning, not just this particular test. But this test can also qualify one for Mensa. so that people can join that the Mensa IQ Society if they score well enough on this test. And that's one of the.
So you can't just talk your way into that thing. You have to actually.
No, that's exactly. You can't just be interviewed into it. No, you have to perform pretty well on a certain test.
I will never, ever make it. 5 minutes before the hour, it's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Wondering whether you have taken the GMATs or the Miller Analogies test and wondering what that experience has been like for you. The MAT part of this is something that has a number of predictors or features a number of predictors for other kinds of success.
Well, it's true that the Miller Analogies test measures a number of things. It measures your ability to think analogically, but it also, to some extent, will measure your ability to learn vocabulary because it tests largely vocabulary, and vocabulary tends to be a good predictor of general academic intelligence. And it also, to some degree, measures your general knowledge, if you've already acquired a lot of knowledge. So we give people techniques, but we also have thousands of digital flashcards for our website. And in fact, Deborah created the website. I provided a lot of material, but Deborah created the website. And we're pretty excited about it because that's one of the ingredients in the course is this website that goes along with it.
We're at 19 minutes before the hour and wondering what your experience has been around these high-level mental ability tests. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. And again, this Miller Analogies test would be something that's not just great for grad school, and some places require it, but also great for thinking through what you might want to do next in your life, for looking at how you critically think, for how you can study better and more effectively. And it occurs to me, Deborah Baxter, that when we talk about the future of work and the fact that young people today are going to have multiple jobs, jobs that we're not even envisioning yet, and all the rest of it, this ability to study really seems very critical, even more so than whatever the field is that you're studying.
It is absolutely vital. And I do a lot of tutoring with students outside of my work at ODU. And I cannot tell you how many students just do not know how to study. That was something that was not taught to them in the K-12 system. And once they learn some of those valuable skills, it's amazing how much better they do on these standardized
tests. So when you say they don't know how to study, what are they missing? What does that mean?
They don't know how to organize themselves. I have students that sit down and they have this information in front of them and they will sit for hours on end trying to cram all this information in their heads. And that's just not a good way to study. It's great to take breaks. It's good to hydrate yourself. There's so many things you can do.
So from an organizing perspective, what should we be doing? Because I think a lot of people are in that category. It just seems overwhelming.
Well, I see a lot of students studying information that they already know over and over and over again. And instead of doing that, maybe, you know, focus on the areas where you really do need to study and the other areas where you already know the information, kind of segment that out and then focus on what you really need to work on, which is kind of how we set up this website. There's different sections like art and artists, units of measurement, music and composers, geographical terms. So if you already know geographical terms, if you feel confident in that area, don't study that. Focus on some of the other areas like art and artists.
Isn't it true, though, or psychologically, that we sort of gravitate to the thing that is the most comfortable?
That's right. That's right. Your comfort zones. I just want to add a little bit to what Deborah's saying, because she was expressing herself very well. I'd like to say that one thing that you need to do is when you learn something is to apply it. And you need to recall it. What happens is people have a superficial sense of fluency if they read and reread something but don't have to recall it. And that's why flashcards are so valuable for certain kinds of information, because you have to actively recall the information. A great way to learn is to, certainly within 24 hours after having learned something, you should have to recall it. And while you're learning it, you should be recalling it. And you should also be applying it. And you should also be trying to teach it to other people. And even if you think of that, well, I'm going to teach this right after I learn it, even with that intention and belief in your mind, you can actually learn things better and you can memorize better. So it's very important to recall information, as you do with flashcards, than simply to read and reread it, because then you may think you've mastered it when you haven't.
Yeah, great point. And so flashcards are a great tool, depending on the subject matter, for recall.
Right.
Apply. What do we mean by that? What do you mean by apply the information?
Well, of course, there there's the MAT also includes math. So one of the things we do is we're going to tell people a little bit about things they'll need to know, like the square roots, negative exponents, and we're going to give them examples, and then they're going to be able to go on their own. So they're going to apply what we're talking about.
Okay.
We're going to give them word roots, and then we're going to give them examples of those, and we're going to say, can you think of other words that contain the same root? So we're going to actively engage the student.
I see. And the other interesting thing about this whole process of, especially if you're using these tests to apply to graduate school, that piece of it, I've talked to more people who say, I'd love to go to graduate school. I'm scared to death of that test. I'm scared to death of GREs, GMATs, whatever, you know, whatever the entry test is, particularly if they've been away from the classroom for a long time.
Well, that's true. And what we're trying to do is to get people to get used to how to study, mm-hmm. because a lot of people, again, don't know how. And the importance, and Deborah mentioned the importance of having frequent breaks. Now, why is that important? First of all, because people can easily fatigue. If they don't have enough breaks. Further, you remember most of what you first study and what you last study, the primacy and recency of, you know, facts of memory, of learning. And so therefore, if you have a lot of frequent breaks, and you only need a few minutes between when you're studying, but if you have a lot of frequent breaks, they're more first and last, and you can actually learn more and remember more that way.
By the way, we have the link to the course on our Facebook page, 440-2665. 1-800-940-2240. I should have properly said the link to apply to take the course. The whole course is not there because you got to apply and register and all that stuff. That's what's on our Facebook page. And if it is not yet, it will be there momentarily. Diane is on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I'm a bit of an analogies fan, so just wanted to call in and make a comment.
Okay.
So I teach psychology, and I use analogies to demonstrate the concept of predictive validity, i.e., does a test actually meaningfully predict performance, whether it's job performance or academic performance. So about 40 students in my psych class, gave them all a page from a prepare for the analogies test practice booklet, which of course none of the students would have seen. And just to clarify, for those who aren't familiar with analogies among your listeners, you know, there are items like hand is to glove as shoe is to blank.
Got it.
Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, foot, leg,
yes.
you know, deer, et cetera. So I gave the exam and I asked the students, how many of you think this is actually going to predict GPA here at our university? All the students were like, no, it's not going to have anything to do. Those questions are dumb. That won't have anything to do with it. Had them all use a secret, you know, a code name for anonymity, write down their GPA, and then scored their analogies test. And the predictive validity correlation coefficient was about 0.5, which means it predicted about 25% of the variance in GPA just from a simple 18 or 20 item analogies test that they took in a class. So that's huge. That's about as the same as you would get from something like the SAT or high school GPA. So in spite of people thinking, oh, this doesn't have anything to do with anything, really does have a lot of value because it relates to A, vocabulary, abstract thinking, mentally manipulating abstract ideas and so forth. So just wanted to share that fun experience.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Your check is in the mail.
love her. I mean, she's dead on.
And you all have noted this as well, that there are some real predictors here, and they seem like sometimes like maybe silly questions or not meaningful, but there's a method to the madness.
Absolutely. I don't think that they use this to get entry into graduate school if it didn't actually prove something.
Yeah, and you know, this is an interesting point too, because a lot of colleges are doing away with the SATs or changing what their entrance requirements are. But you're big believers in this test.
We are. And again, I think this course is designed, though, for people who just want to improve their vocabularies, their ability to think, their ability to study. Yes, I mean, we're fans of this test. But as I say, it can be a means to get into grad school, but it can also be the course we have is also designed to help people think and to develop and improve brain fitness. It's not simply for this course, for this test, although it's for that, but it's also as a broader goal of helping people with brain fitness.
11 minutes before the hour, Nancy is on the line from Chesapeake with a different opinion. Hi, Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi there. Now, I took the Miller analogy test over 30 years ago, because I graduated from nursing graduate school at ODU in 1985, and I did not do well on the test. I found it very difficult. It compared a lot of different types of farm animals to another different type of farm animal, and it may have changed over the years. But I maintained pretty much a 4.0 through all of graduate school.
Okay, fair enough. Well done, Nancy.
Well, the answer to that, of course, is that it's absolutely true that some people have done extremely well in grad school while doing not well on the Miller Analogies test, partly because they might not have been familiar with the layout. They're brilliant people who have done very well in grad school. There have also been people who have done well. I mean, you can have that. Obviously, it's not going to predict every person, and it would be a mistake to judge a person's whole intelligence on the basis of any one test. You have to look at their work habits. You have to look at what is called grit, their passion and their perseverance. There's so many other factors, and so I'm sympathetic to what she has said, because I don't think you should judge everyone by one test or their performance or on a particular test at a particular time. But that doesn't mean that it hasn't been valuable in predicting behavior for a lot of other people.
Thank you for the call, Nancy. And has it changed over time?
Oh, it has.
Yeah.
Dramatically, even in the way that they score. Rod took the test earlier than I did. I don't remember what year.
It was in 2003. Mm-hmm. I think that the kinds of questions haven't enormously changed. But but it's true the scoring has, because before it would be just a raw score. There'd be no experimental questions on it. It'd be 100. Now there are 120, and there's a score that's 200 to 600. It was 400 in the median. But the actual sorts of questions they ask and the kinds of reasoning are largely the same.
Yeah.
But as I say, there are 20 questions that don't count, and the scoring is somewhat different. But
correct.
Instead of just raw score.
Fair enough. Nancy, thank you for the call. We're at 9 minutes before the hour. So do you have to take the MAT to this MAT Miller Analogies test to apply to be in Mensa, which is...
No. It's just one of the ways to get into Mensa.
Yeah.
If you get within the 95th percentile of all the total group of testers of the Miller Analogies test, you may join Mensa. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be somewhere between the 430 to 445 range of your actual score. But the fact of the matter is Mensa accepts lots of other tests as well. It's just that this test is just an hour.
Yes.
And it's not all that expensive compared to other tests.
Sure.
The Mensa test itself isn't that expensive. But the thing is, GRE would be much more expensive and be more like 4 hours rather than an hour.
Fair enough. Mensa, by the way, the largest and oldest high IQ society in the world. It's a nonprofit organization open to people who score at the 98th percentile or higher on IQ or other approved intelligence tests. That's a whole lot of smart people.
It is.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're at 8 minutes before the hour. So we want to let you know as well that we have the link on our Facebook page if you're interested in the course, which will not only help you with this test, but also will teach you great study habits and maybe if graduate school is in your future, if you're returning to school and you haven't been in school for a while, what a great opportunity to brush up your skills and to get ready for school in a new environment. You can also call to register, and I'm not sure which number to call.
I'm not sure which number to call either,
okay,
to be perfectly honest.
I've got two
honest.
Different ones. We'll figure that out.
However, I'd like to give another website, which is matstudyprep.weebly.com. And Weebly is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y. And I'll say that again. Mm-hmm. matstudyprep.weebly.com.
And what's that one?
And that is the website that Rod and I put together, because there's so much information about this course, and it's impossible to put it all on ODU's website.
Got it.
So if anyone is interested in taking this course, it will give so much more information as to
and
what
we'll
we're
get
planning
that,
to do.
We'll get that website posted
great.
On our rundown as well as resolve the phone number issue, because I think we've got one for the college and then one for
different. Do you want to give your
number,
email
so.
Address?
Oh, yeah. And if anyone has any questions, they can contact me directly. My email, my ODU email is dbaxter, so dbaxter at odu.edu.
All right. Fair enough. So the course, when does the course start?
January 23rd.
Okay, so you've got plenty of time to apply and get accepted. Is it in person or online?
Okay, it's both because it's WebEx, so they don't have to be in the Virginia Beach Higher Education Center to take it. The other thing is it meets twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays for 3 weeks. So there's 6 sessions, 3 hours long, and we're pretty excited about it. And as I say, there's a website that comes along with the course.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
And it's the Miller Analogies Test. All the information on our Facebook page, and we'll have that for you. And again, the course starts later this month, so you will definitely want to be sure to stay tuned. We are also wanting to invite you, if you were interested in doing this, to a terrific event coming up Monday night. You know, we've talked so much on this program about redistricting and about gerrymandering. There is a documentary film coming up Monday night at 7 at Virginia Wesleyan College, brought to you by the organization called One Virginia 2021, which is advocating nonpartisan redistricting reform. So essentially that event is coming up on Monday, January 9th at Virginia Wesleyan College. 7 o'clock is the screening, and you'll get to learn more about fair redistricting, about gerrymandering, about the fact that Virginia is the 5th most gerrymandered state in the country. We've talked about it a lot on this broadcast, so I wanted to make sure that you are aware of that opportunity again coming up Monday, January 9th. Up next right here on 89.5, it is Radiolab. Then coming up tonight on WHRO TV 15, Nature introduces the Coy Wolf, a remarkable new hybrid that's a mixture of a coyote and a wolf. How about that? That's coming up tonight at 8 on Nature. And then tonight at 9, NOVA presents Secrets of the Sky Tombs. A team of scientists and explorers probe high-altitude tombs in the Tibetan Himalayas. So that's coming up tonight at 9 on NOVA. I'm going to tell you something. I know you are so excited, as everybody is, about the new historic costume drama on WHRO TV 15, because we've all been bereft since Downton Abbey went off the air. Victoria will be debuting on Masterpiece beginning January 15th at 9 o'clock in that Sunday night time slot that Downton Abbey has occupied for 6 years. And all the advance buzz on this says it is spectacular. They're saying it has it all, a riveting script, a brilliant cast, and spectacular locations, exactly the kind of programming Masterpiece fans will love. So that's coming up for you beginning Sunday, January 15th on WHRO TV 15. Can't not wait. Been kind of missing that. Hope you have as well seen the latest iteration of Sherlock. Brilliant show. Started last Sunday. Easy to catch up on. So that's available for you as well. Lots of great programming coming up, both here on 89.5 and on WHRO TV 15. Okay, people are still losing their minds about the snow. We'll keep you updated on it through the afternoon. It's not here yet. Not even come until the weekend, if it comes at all. Now, I'm going to say that, and we're going to have a blizzard or something, you know, because we're just trying to calm everybody down, but you know how these things go. Thanks so very much for being with us today, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.